Morning has broken like the first morning. Blackbird has spoken like the first bird. Praise for the singing, praise for the morning, praise for the springing.
So that song and a number of others that followed signaled to those who were interested that Cat Stevens was a man in search of something spiritual. By the mid-70s, having flirted with astrology and Buddhism, he found it. He announced he was giving up his singing career to become a Muslim. To prove it, he changed his name to Yusuf Islam. Now, what to many pop stars would merely be a flash in the pan, to Yusuf Islam has been an enduring truth. For the past 7 years, he's devoted much of his life to the study of the Quran and Islam, and he spends a lot of time working with a school and Islamic study centre in London. Yusuf Islam, it's become rather a cliche of the gossip columns that the glamour and the razzmatazz of the pop superstar's life is actually hell if you're living it. Is that the way you found it?
Well, music, the music business is, yes, it's connected to us quite a lot with hell, I should think, but I wouldn't say it's all like that, though. Of course, there is a good side to it, providing you can see it for what it is.
As a child, at least one member of your family was Greek Orthodox, were you drawn to any particular religion?
Of course, I received basic Christian upbringing. I didn't really question that because, of course, you take it for granted that your parents know better than you. But anyway, as I grew up in that atmosphere, there did seem to be a sort of a dichotomy or separation between what seemed to be the spiritual ideal, you know, and the actual material life going on around me. So I suppose because of the attraction of the life of the world, and because the religious life seemed kind of difficult and not quite for me, so I went naturally into the life of the world. I was brought up in the West End of London, so I think that had something to do with me going into show business.
But in those years, in the late 60s, it seemed that scarcely a week went by without some pop star or other heading for the hills in India or Nepal to sit at the feet of a guru. Were you ever tempted to take that path?
Yes, in fact, that was part of my journey, I would say, that, you know, during that time, I think I just had a sort of brief career in the beginning with my early songs and things. And then I had contracted tuberculosis. That was around, let me see, 1969, something like that, 1968, 69. That made me think more seriously about life. I started studying meditation. In a way, I'd lost my faith in Christianity, I suppose, because I felt that it was too linked with the system, you know, and that we wanted to break away from the system. I believed in God, but not through any particular dogma or, you know, doctrine.
Could I just ask you before you go on, what do you mean linked with the system when you were talking about Christianity?
Well, it seemed to me that the Christian faith was, there was a kind of a hierarchy, you know, built in with it. And I think I wanted something more natural, perhaps more spiritual. I didn't find it in the church.
When you were struck down with with TB and took you a year's convalescence to get over that. Did you at any time feel that this was a sort of divine retribution for your evil life? I mean, the headlines about Cath Stevens up until then had been Cath Stevens, the man with the fast ladies and fast cars. Did you feel that God was somehow telling you something when you led you down with TB?
Not really. I think it was more of a natural consequence. I thought that it was nature working its way out. But of course, there was also the other thought that I have to actually somehow find out what this nature is and what it wants from me. And of course, as I said, I still believed deeply in God, but I didn't know exactly how to connect or what exactly God wanted from me.
And during this time of spiritual quest, you tried a number of things, didn't you? You didn't immediately come to Islam. You tried a number of things on the way, as it were.
Yes, as I say, I tried meditation. I mean, I was a vegetarian. I believed, of course, along with many of my generation, in peace, love. But the practical way of achieving that, I had no idea. I'd also become interested in Zen, also in astrology. At one time I was, looking at the stars for guidance. You go through all these phases. I wasn't sure. I didn't think there was any particular religion which seemed to have the universal answer, the meaning that would be for me and for everyone else at the same time. I didn't think there was such a faith. I thought perhaps I'd have to make up my own religion, if you like.
Well, can you tell us how your revelation, your conversion to Islam, the moment that you knew that Islam was the way forward for you, how did that happen?
Well, it was rather late. I was about 27 at that time. And I tried, as I said, all these other ways. I'd been searching, but without finding actually the peace that I was looking for. Then I was given a copy of the Quran. And that's really how I began to embrace Islam. It was, in fact, a gift from my elder brother, David. And when I started to read the Quran, it struck me that this was like no other book I'd ever come across. The words seemed to be so straightforward and speaking with such authority. It didn't seem as if any human being had written this book.
Was there one sentence in the Quran that unlocked the secret for you?
Well, I think if you take the Quran as a whole, it couldn't just have happened like that with one sentence, but it was a gradual awakening to the fact that there was nothing wrong with this book. I mean, the more I read it, the more I realized there was no contradiction, whereas all other books I knew had to have something wrong with them. They were written by a human being, they had to. But there was something about this book that didn't show any signs of imperfection. And the most striking thing, I would say, the thing that grasped me the most,
was the testimony in the Quran, the constant testimony to the fact that there is only one God. And that, to me, gave me the message I was looking for, because up until that point, I thought that religion is a personal business, something which, when you choose that way, I'll choose this way, I personally think I'm right, but in fact, this was something which I felt had to be accepted by everyone, because everyone by nature believes in some higher power, some controlling force. Many names are given,
But essentially, it comes down to this, that there has to be only one for all. And that naturally led to changing my whole view of life. For instance, it naturally brings you to understand that people are equal, because we're all created by the same God, and that we're all servants of the same Lord. So that gives you a kind of a feeling that there is unity, purpose, bond between human beings. And that's what I found was the most impressive aspect of the Quran.
When you began to read the Quran, did you find there were certain passages which you took to be signposts on this path you were following?
Yes, I think if I can read you a very small chapter first. This is in fact called the chapter of unity. And it's said to be equal to one third of the Quran, because again, the subject is unity. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم قل هو الله أحد الله الصمد لم يلد ولم يولد ولم يكن له كفوا أحد.
Translation of that. In the name of God,
the gracious, most merciful, say, He is Allah, the One. Allah, the sole Lord of all. He neither bears children, nor was He ever born. And like Him, there is no one. I think this gives you the effect to understand
that oneness of God means oneness of purpose for us and for the universe.
So when you came into contact with this oneness of purpose, having read and accepted the Quran, did you feel that you just had to cut yourself off from the life you had led before? I mean, could you have carried on singing, for example, or did you have to put that behind you?
Well, you see, it wasn't necessary for me to cut myself off as such, and in fact I didn't, because I kept on making music, I kept on singing, I was on the road, but yet I was still a Muslim. What happened was, I think, when I finally did embrace Islam officially, if you like, unquote, then I had to begin to do certain things. One of them is, of course, most important, is the prayer, is that you pray five times a day. And this, in a way, had an incredible effect on my life, because your relationship with God, the closeness that you feel, has to begin with prayer. How else do we communicate with God? So that starts to develop your God consciousness. After that, you find that, of course, you can't do the same things you used to do, because you know that God has made it clear for you that this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do. So you start to make a way in your life, and you start to go away from those things which are dangerous. For instance, singing on stage. It's obvious that music isn't forbidden as such in Islam, but showing off is, because again it contradicts your belief that there is only one to be worshipped. So therefore, any idea that would lead to some kind of human worship or idolization is bad. Therefore, being on a stage, having spotlight, even this situation is slightly more innocent, but you've got to be very careful. So I withdrew from public performances, and I just continued to make records. But again, after a while, I lost my interest in music as well, to a large degree. So I was more interested in, you know, studying Islam, and that's what I did.
It's a very formal code, isn't it? A very strict code in the Quran. Does it? Do you find it shackles you in a way? It lays down so clearly how you must live your life. It does seem to cut out a lot of human free will.
Well, actually, I would say it's the opposite, because what I would say is people that go around, number one, saying that they're free, they've got free will. Well, yes, we do have free will, to a certain extent. And yes, they are free, free to go on making mistakes. But if you choose to follow God's way, this is your choice. Doesn't mean that you're giving up your free will. It means that you're submitting your will to God's will. And that really, I think, is something to do with controlling yourself as well. This helps you to know where you're going. Otherwise, you know that so many people are lost because they're all completely free. They've got no rules. But another thing, I would say that it's not so much, let's say, it's a restricted way of life. Actually, the basic rule in Islam, which I don't think many people know, is that everything is allowed except those things which are forbidden. And that's a completely different way of looking at it. And that is, in fact, the way it is in Islam. For instance, if you're talking about food, all food is permitted except for, we say, pork, or dead meat, meat which has died by itself naturally, and so on. So if you look at it, it's the other way around. We're free to do anything so long as it doesn't go against some of the commandments that we know.
How did your colleagues, the people you were working with, people in the music business at the time, react when you embraced Islam as passionately as you have? I mean, did you find that they were skeptical, that they said, oh, here's another pop star, you know, who's found his instant karma?
I think a lot of my friends in the beginning, you see, as I was studying the Quran before my acceptance, I was withdrawing from the social circuit, if you like. Because anyway, I didn't like the social circuit. I never liked parties. I never liked, you know, receptions. I always had to be rather drunk to, you know, to go on with them. But yes, I was withdrawing. And my friends, I think a lot of them thought I was acting rather strange. You know, here was I carrying this book with me everywhere and going into my room and reading. And but of course, you've got to also realize that a lot of my friends have been with me for a long time. They know also my lyrics, my character, and they knew I was searching. Perhaps they did think, oh, this is just a passing phase, you know, this is just something which is he's going through.
If it's 1971, it must be Islam, yes.
Yeah, so, but that, of course, has been proved wrong, because no one really enters Islam to leave it. There's no wish to go anywhere else.
How many of your friends from those days actually followed you into the world of Islam?
Yes, I mean, I still have very good relations with, you know, my friends from my previous career. And I still have business associates, for instance, accountants and such. But I wouldn't say that they've embraced Islam as I have, but they've come to understand the message of Islam, which I think is very important. I think the first stage, if you're not searching desperately for a way of life, you first of all must look at things in their perspective. And a lot of people, I think, have been misjudging Islam because of the way it's been presented, and usually by, of course, non-Muslims.
Perhaps not misjudging. I think a lot of people are perhaps frightened of the revelation of Islam, because they see in the revelation of Islam the Ayatollah. They see the face of the Ayatollah. Mm. And they're terrified of what he's doing, the Ayatollah and his holy war.
Mm. Well, as I often say, I mean, if you're going to take this aspect or this view of Islam, you've got to remember that this is one particular event which is happening in history to a certain section of the Muslim community, which would only total, I would say, 4%. And you're judging Islam itself by this view of 4%. It's not really equatable with Islam. Although I don't say everything that Imam Khomeini is doing is absolutely right. I wouldn't say that he's doing so many bad things. I'd say that you have to look at it in balance to what there was before. The reaction of coming from an oppressive regime such as the Shah has its effect. But then again, I wouldn't agree, as I say, with everything. And for that, we can say that we don't have to, because in Islam you have the word of God, which is for all people. It's not particular to any time or space. So therefore, whatever anyone does in the name of Islam has to be judged by the Quran and by the revelation of God, and that is just, and nobody can dispute that.
And yet people, hearing you talk now, and whilst they will undoubtedly be able to see the peace and calmness that you've achieved through Islam, might find it hard to equate the lyrics of peace that you once wrote about on your road, on your quest, and, for example, the system of Islamic justice, which is, again, something else which has made headlines in recent months, which seems so brutal. When do you support that sort of level of brutality that we hear about associated with Islamic justice?
What do you mean?
Amputation for thieves, for example.
Well, I'll give you an example about this. If you go to Saudi Arabia, and I've travelled to Saudi Arabia, where there is the Islamic law, you'll very rarely find anyone with only one hand. What you will find, and what I've seen with my own eyes, people leaving. When the time for prayer comes, people leave in their shops, wide open, just putting a little sheet on top, going to prayer, coming back, and everything being in its place, people leaving bags in the middle of the street. And this is what, in a way, people are judging. People are saying, oh, it's such a harsh punishment, but what is the effect? What does it do? It actually protects, if you like, the innocent. And it punishes the guilty, whereas what we find in this society is it protects the guilty and it punishes the innocent. And that's the balance that, you know, if we make up laws ourselves, we're bound to make mistakes. God doesn't make mistakes. When he decrees something, it's good for the majority. But that's the way we have to view it. I think that's very important.
You certainly seem to have embraced the faith more passionately than even people who were born Muslims. But does that indicate that you feel you've got a sort of divine mission?
Well, every one of us has a divine mission. Every human being has been created to worship and serve God. And so in a way, I mean, I may be fulfilling my mission a little bit more than someone else, let's say, but in the concept, as we see it in Islam, that all people are servants of God, whether they're obeying or disobeying.
Couldn't you have done more, though? I mean, couldn't you have spread the message more widely if you'd adhered to your faith of Islam, but spread the message using the talents of music, of lyric writing, and performance of Cat Stevens?
Again, you come to the point of how do you follow Islam? Do you follow it your way, or do you follow it the way that should be followed? Does a person come to a religion to suit himself, or must he change himself to the religion? And as I believe that Islam is not just a religion concocted, it is actually the nature, the best nature, the best code of life for any human being, then it means that you must change your way of life to that in order to achieve what do you want? So if there is music in Islam, it will come after I've learnt what Islam is, and more than just coming up in the beginning and say, ha ha, I know what Islam is, this is what it is, everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon. There's no benefit in that kind of propagation. People come to Islam only for sincere reasons and not for any other reason.
Yusuf Islam.
The first thing that I learnt in becoming a Muslim was that God is one, and that He has created us in the first place according to His own design. And the only thing is, He has given us also that bit extra, because He's given us a will. Now, He wants us to work according to His design, but He's given us the choice.
But didn't you find it very difficult indeed to make this choice?
To actually come to Islam, it was a long time. I mean, I was searching for the truth.
What form did this search take?
Well, I searched through many religions. In the beginning, I was brought up as a Roman Catholic. Mm-hmm. I believed in God, but I didn't believe everything they told me. And I wanted the truth.
And how did you find that the Islam faith gave you that truth?
Because it's the original message, which is the religion of the prophets, in fact. And all the prophets came with the same message. That was that God is one. Worship God and avoid evil. So it wasn't that difficult to adjust back to the original religion.
Now, when you say the prophets, do you mean Moses and Isaiah and people like this who are in the Old Testament?
All the prophets of the Old Testament, Abraham, Jesus, and of course the final prophet, Muhammad, sallallahu alaihi wasallam.
Now, your sacred book is the Quran. How similar is the Quran to the Bible?
Well, of course, it has the same author.
Yes.
God sent the books to mankind. And originally, of course, Adam, God taught him the words. And then, of course, we have Moses. We believe in all the books, but the Quran is the confirmation of all the books previously. In other words, if you lost all the books that were ever written, you'll be able to reconstruct them from the Quran.
Now, for many, your faith obviously means a tremendous amount to you. What have you got to say to people whose lives are so busy these days that they feel there's no peace in their life at all?
Well, peace, I believe, comes from the belief in one God. Once you realize that everything that is created, no matter whether you see it or don't see it, there's no mystery. Of course, there is some things which we can see, some things we can't see, but at least if we believe that God in His mercy has created everything, there is only one God, and He's wanting us to come back to Him. The only thing for us to do is to pray.
Yusuf, normally I would thank my guests and ask for applause, but you wouldn't approve of that, would you?
No, that's not. We praise God, we don't praise men.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you very much indeed.
يعدكم الله أن تعودوا سبيل الله وليعفوا وليصفحوا ألا تحبون أن يغفر الله لكم والله غفور رحيم حتى تستأنسوا وتسلموا